We're here on Daf Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. What we did was the Mishnah, which is smack in the middle of the page, and we're ready for the Gemara. Just to quickly review the Mishnah, we don't want to have benefits from stolen monies, and the Mishnah identifies two sources that we have to avoid taking money from them because that money is assumed to be stolen money. One is called Tevas Ha Mochsin, and the other is called Kis Shel Gaboy. And these are tax collectors of various types, and they overcharge and overtax, and there's a lot of money that's stolen here. And we're going to see why these tax collectors are being accused of Gzela. That's going to be the most important question of our discussion today. And the reason why the Gemara is really fighting and battling against this concept of the meches, the tax collectors are stealing money, is because of the super principle of Shmuel, which we're going to see here for the first time, and that is Dina de Malchusa Dina. And every government has the right to tax. Again, in the case of the colonies, you know, they felt that they didn't have representation, and therefore they didn't want taxation. So they rebelled, and hence we have the United States. But again, I'm a little biased over here. Be that as it may, even within the United States, we had a rebellion. We had the Confederates against the Northerners. But as a general rule, the halacha does recognize government and the right of government to, number one, legislate laws, number two, to judiciary to decide cases, and number three, the executive branch of government, which makes decisions to go out to battle and may decide about lands and who owns lands. And in this context of Dina de Malchusa Dina, the government is certainly legitimate in its raising of taxes, because you can't build bridges and you can't fight a battle and a military campaign without funds. In fact, I personally, when I say Baruch Aleinu Hashana Zos, you know, the Parnos, which is the ninth bracha, I don't know about you guys, but I keep in mind Medinas Yisrael, that we should have enough money. Because I noticed in a few of the wars that we fought here, and, you know, the IDF, that there were certain cases, because they were a little bit stingy and they didn't have the money, you know, there was a certain element of danger in... Okay, I don't want to go into detail here because I get very emotional. I almost lost a nephew because of this, because the Israelis didn't have the money to put into a certain particular campaign. But be that as it may, a government has to raise taxes and raise funds for a variety of reasons, and that is legitimate. And in that case, we don't understand the very premise that underlies our Mishnah, that these govei muchsin that are collecting the taxes are accused of gzela, and the monies that they're holding on to are stolen monies. I mean, these are monies that are raised because of taxation, and Dina de Malchusa Dina, and therefore that's legit. In fact, the Gemara quotes a brisa that allows and justifies one case in which you get money from muchsin, and that's a case where, let's say, for example, they tax you a dinar, and you don't have a dinar. Let's say you have a selah, and you want, therefore, get change from the tax collector. So that's the first tata that you'll see here. Aval, no sein lo dinar, v'no sein lo sashar. If he has to pay him with a very heavy coin that's worth a lot, because that's all he has in his pocket, he's allowed to take the change from the tax collector. And the reason for that is because he's not trying to benefit from monies that really are illegitimate and he has no rights to. He's trying to benefit from his own monies. He's really saving himself a loss because he doesn't have to pay that much in taxes, and that which he receives in change, that's okay. The Gemara says, this is where the sugya begins, Umochsin, are you telling me that mochsin, these tax collectors, have the status of gazlanim? We assume, until we know otherwise, that they are stealing funds. Ve'al amar Shmuel, we have the statement of Shmuel, Dina de Malchusa Dina. That means that the government has laws, and those laws are recognized as valid, even by the halacha itself, despite the fact that those laws, please keep this in mind, do not reflect the halacha. It's not like the government is a, you know, here in Israel, I don't know if you ever heard of it, there's a movement called Hamishpat HaEvri. Is everybody familiar with that? If you're not, please raise your hand. Hamishpat HaEvri is a movement to try to impress upon the Israeli legislators that we can go back to our original Hebrew sources and create a modern civil legal system. And we don't have to borrow from the Turks and the Brits and all the other legal systems in the world. We can have our own indigenous and independent Jewish legal system. That's called Hamishpat HaEvri, the Hebrew law. Now, to this day, it's not clear whether they've proven their point or not. Obviously, the halakha addresses all issues, but to create an entire legal system with all the complications of modern contemporary life, that's quite a challenge. In many law schools here in Israel, they require at least one course in Mishpat HaEvri. This is for every Israeli, no matter secular or not, or even Arabs who are studying for law. They will have to take this course. In some universities, it's an elective. But there is such a branch of law called HaMishpat HaEvri. So I'm not telling you that when Shmuel says Dina Malchus Dina, he's referring to HaMishpat HaEvri. He's not referring to Mishpat HaEvri. This is not the Hebrew law. This is the secular law as is. And yet we have to respect the law. And Allah has a great deal of respect for law. And that's called Dina de Malchus Dina. Now, by way of introduction to our sugya, I want to point out that there are fundamentally two different approaches to Dina de Malchus Dina. Okay? And the first approach we're going to identify with the Rashbam in Baba Basra. Not the Rashbam here, but the Rashbam in Baba Basra. The second approach we're going to identify with the Ran, and the Ran is not here, but rather Ran in Gittin and in the Dharam, in two places. Okay. The Rashbam says the following, that there are two types or categories of governments. There's something called a melucha, and then there's something called a memshala. The difference is that, although I don't think he's referring to democracy, but he is referring to a nation that accepts upon themselves the authority of the government. And in the language of the Rashbam, that's called Bnei HaMalchus Kiblu Aleihem Eschukei HaMelech UMishpatov Mirtzonam. So the Rashbam says that the rule of Shmuel, that Dina Malchus Dina, is limited to the case of a government that is legitimized by the fact that the members of that community, the citizens that live within that country, accept upon themselves the authority of the king. Now, it doesn't mean necessarily that every last person, you know, you have the left and you have the right and the liberals and the we, you know, you have all the different parties. Not everybody accepts the government, but the government as a whole was, in some sense, elected by the people. Not elected again in the democratic sense by necessarily a vote, but the government is a compassionate government. Its laws are legislated for the sake of the people. We're not talking about a despot that's forcing himself down the throats of the people in order to exploit them. We're not talking about a president who will buy thousands of pairs of shoes just to enjoy, you know, the benefit and squeeze the people for their pleasures. But we're talking about a mishpat which is chukei hamelech shekiblu aleihem mirtzonam. That's the shita of the Rashbam. And the Achronim claim that according to the Rashbam, that principle of Dina de Malchus Dina applies even in Eretz Yisrael. Even a government that is secular by nature, but has been accepted by the people of Israel, that government is legit, and the rule of Shmuel of Dina Malchus Dina will apply. And I mention this in contrast to the approach of the Ran, which we're about to present, which is radically different than that of the Rashbam as to what underlies the principle of Shmuel, of Dina the Malchusa, Dina. According to the Rashbam, and the big question is where the Rambam fits into this, according to the Ran, excuse me, Dina the Malchusa, Dina is based on a different principle, and that is Shekol Ha'aretz Shayeches LaMelech. That the government, or the king that represents the government, has control over the land. And insofar as he has control over the land, he can expel or exile any member, any citizen of that land according to his will. And the Rashba seems to agree with the Ran and goes as far as to say that this halacha of Dina Malchusa Dina applies only outside of the land of Israel, but a melech in the land of Israel, if he wasn't appointed as a melech halachically, then Dina Malchusa Dina doesn't apply because he doesn't own the land and he has no right to expel a Jew from the land of Israel. And this is based on a sugya in Bava Basra, which is called Eretz Yisrael Muchzekes Ilanu Me'avoseinu, that Eretz Yisrael belongs to the people. And when I say to the people, I don't mean the conglomerate of all the members of the Jewish community at any one given moment of time. It means the Jewish nation, which is called Knesset Yisrael, that spans all of history. So every Jew has ownership rights in Eretz Yisrael. Now, in the Rogachev's terminology, that's called mizugit. I don't know if anybody's familiar with the Yechiel, you know what I'm talking about. Alan, you know what I'm talking about, right? So mizugit means that it's not that Reuven owns his part of the land of Israel and Shimon owns his part of Israel. It's not, Mitch, were you there when we discussed this?
Yeah.
It's not a partnership. It's not a shutfus. In the case of a shutfus, each one owns his part. And in the case of a shutfus, each one could forfeit his part. So for example, if we're partners over an eved, then you could be meshachar your chelik in the eved, and I can decide that I would retain ownership on my chelik in the eved. Hence, chatzi eved, chatzi ben chorin. That famous schizophrenia case, which is half an eved and half ben chorin. That's shutfus. And in the case of Eretz Yisrael, we're not talking about shutfus. It doesn't mean that you own a part of the land and you can give up your ownership on part of the land. It doesn't mean that the ownership on Eretz Yisrael is the sach hakol of all the people living at one time, and we could all agree that we want to forfeit the land. It just doesn't work that way. It's a metaphysical ownership that spans all generations. And by the way, that's one of the reasons why Rabbi Rav Soloveitchik refused to apply for the candidacy of being Chief Rabbi of Israel, because he could not accept the concept, which was so basic back in the 30s and the 40s, of heter mechira, you know, to sell the land for Shemitah, which means that all the farmers are going to agree that we're going to sell the land to the Goyim. We just don't have that ability to sell the land as far as Kedusha Shvius is concerned, because the Kedusha Shvius is a reflection of the ownership of Eretz Yisrael on the part of the people over the course of all generations. But be that as it may, Dina de Malchusa Dina, according to the Ran Shita, does not apply in Eretz Yisrael. However, it would apply in the case of a malucha, even if that malucha functions without the agreement of the people. They weren't makabel olav eschukov umishpatov miritzonam, but nevertheless he has the power and the ability to exile people from the land. The ownership is his, and therefore dina de malchusa dina. Now let's swing back to Masech the Bava Kama. That was just a little bit of a teal through shots. Now we get back to
you. How would you interpret the Rashbam? Let's go back 150 years to the Russian government, to the government.
Questionable. You know, with all the czars and the paritzes and all the despotic, you know, what do they call them? The tyrants, you know, that took control of the land. According to the Rashbam, I doubt if Dina Malchusa Dina would apply. And assuming that your average Jew lived under the, shall we say, under the hashkafa of the Rashbam, you begin to understand, again, I'm not justifying, I'm just telling you the sociology, the socio-historical phenomenon, that when Jews came from these countries to, for example, the shores of the United States, and I'm sure the same is true in Europe, they had very little respect for government. And the idea of cheating the government was not an issue. What do you mean cheating the government? There's a mitzvah to cheat the government. You know what I'm saying? So what happened to Dina de Malchusa Dina? So according to Rashbam, I can justify it in this, at least in a sociological sense. They were used to being oppressed by a government that was illegitimate, that didn't have the compassion and the sensitivity for the sake of the individual citizen, and therefore Dina de Malchusa Dina, according to Rashbam, doesn't apply. Okay, but let's get back to Bava Basra, because to Bava Kama, I mean, because now I want to make some progress. Oh,
you said so about the melech.
Yeah, the melech. So now,
in the case of a melech, the land belongs to him.
According to the law of the land, if the government or the king representing the government is in charge of the land and he exercises ownership over the land, then, says the Ran, we apply the principle of Dina de Malchus Adin. So now, whichever way you want to slice the cake, we come back to the case of Tevas HaMuchsim that we're dealing with in our Mishnah. The Muchsim, presumably, were appointed by the Melech, or by the Malchus. And insofar as they are the tax collectors representing the Malchus, they are just simply implementing the law of the land, and the statutes of the land are legitimate. Let's assume we're dealing with Bavel, right? Talmud Bavli, Sorin Chutz Laretz. So even the Ran would applaud and accept the principle of Dina Malchus Adina. According to Rashbam, we certainly want to apply Dina Malchus Adina in the case of a compassionate government. Why then does the Mishnah assume that all the money that's been taken by these tax collectors is non-kosher money? It's got gzela to it, and therefore you can't benefit from it. And the Gemara offers two answers to this question. The first answer is that of Rav Chanina, and the second is that of Rav Yanai. Omer Rav Chanina bar Kahan Omer Shmuel b'moches she'ein lo kitzbah. Now, let's see what that means literally and what we can make out of it conceptually. We applied Dina de Malchus Adina to the Malchus. But the question is, does this apply in the case of a moches she'ein lo kitzbah, which means that the law of the land allows the tax collector unlimited rights to collect whatever amount he sees fit? He can decide to charge you 10%, he can decide to tax you 50% or 100%. He can simply confiscate all your property. In this case, and let's go with the Rashbam's approach, clearly the law of the land is not meant for the benefit of the citizens of the land. What the kingship is doing is they're giving carte blanche, a green light to the moches, to the tax collector, to collect whatever he wants. And surely he's going to collect whatever he wants and pocket a tremendous amount of money. That law, that statute that allows him to collect unlimited is not within the purview of Dina de Malchus Adina. And the Mefarshim want to point out here that there's a big chiddush in Rav Chanina, and maybe Debei Rav Yana is a little bit hesitant or inhibited about this chiddush, that according to Rav Chanina, even if the kingship in general is accepted by the people, but if the laws and statutes that govern taxation are not fair and they're not just, then the Dina Malchus Adina, excuse me, that applies to most of the statutes will not apply to this statute. In other words, the chiddush here of Rav Chanina is that it's not an all or nothing endeavor here. We're not going to decide whether we accept the Malchus and it comes under the halacha of Dina Malchus or we don't accept the Malchus. It could be we do accept the Malchus. But in this particular area of the finance law that allows taxation without limited ein la kitzbah, there's no limit, that is not judged and defined as a fair law, and therefore doesn't come under Dina Malchus Adina. So you could imagine that there could be a Malchus that sort of gives the, you know, looks away towards the implementation of certain laws, and the citizen is suffering from that, and he's being robbed of his money. In such a case, we don't apply the principle of Dina Malchus Adina. That's according to Rav Chanina. But the Bei Rav Yane Amri, the Moches HaOmed Me'elo, what we're talking about here is a case of Yeshla Kitzvah. And there are laws that restrict the amount of money that the individual citizen is going to be taxed. But this Moches was not specifically appointed by the king. We need something called a Minui. And a Minui means that the Malchus has to appoint him. If the Malchus doesn't appoint him, but the Malchus says anybody could go ahead and collect these taxes, then at that point, even if the Moches is only collecting a certain limited amount of taxes, you know, the 10% that he's allowed to collect, but he wasn't officially appointed, and if he's not an appointee of the Malchus, then his procedure of tax collection doesn't come under Dina de Malchus Adina. In other words, Dina de Malchus Adina applies to taxation if A, the taxation is fair, and B, if the tax collectors are duly appointed by the king, and we view them as the arm to implement, right, they're the executive branch of the legislator, the law of tax collection and tax payment. But if they operate on their own, and again, you have to think of various reasons, I don't know if anyone could come up with their own explanation as to why the king didn't appoint this moches. Maybe there's a certain element of hefkeres here in the land in which the king doesn't have full control over his land, that he has dominion over many different provinces, and in certain provinces, you know, he looks the other way and he hopes that the mochsen will work on behalf of the kingship, and they're doing their own thing, and maybe they are working on behalf of the kingship, but since they weren't appointed as such, therefore we're afraid that the monies that they're taking is going to be pocketed by the moches himself. And you don't apply the principle of Dina de Malchus Adin. Now, at this point, Rabosai, the sugya becomes absolutely fascinating. I'm very excited. Where else do we find the possibility of cheating the government? And where else in Shas, and we're going to look through three different Mishnais in three different contexts, do we find the possibility of legitimizing cheating the government as far as tax evasion is concerned? And the Gemara is going to say the following: Ika demasni le aha. We have the possibility that Rabbi Chanina and Rabbi Yanai, we know exactly what each one of them says, but we don't know in what context they made their comments. Is it possible that their comments were an addendum to a totally different Mishnah, and they were not answering the question of how and why the moches in our Mishnah is assumed to be a gazlan and doesn't come under Dina de Malchus Adina? Maybe there were other Mishnayos in Shas, and the Gemara is going to show its erudite scholarship here by investigating all sorts of Mishnayos here, there, and elsewhere, where perhaps the issue of Dina de Malchus Adina is going to come to the fore. And the first case is a Mishnah in Kelayim. The law is that if you wear kelayim, you violate a lav. But the issue is, are you allowed to wear kelayim in order to avoid taxes? Now what happens is the following. When the government taxes you, they tax you for merchandise that you're selling. They don't tax you for the begadim that you're wearing on your body. So this guy is a shmata seller, right? He's in the shmata business, as we call it lovingly in New York City. That's where I come from. And you know, our friends from the Chalavi community and other such communities have made a tremendous success in the shmata business. And you could go down to Manhattan and see buildings that are tremendous buildings that were built by people who sell garments. There's an entire district in New York called the Garment District, and that's where all the shuls in New York were way back in the day. And the question of the Mishnah in Kalayim is, what happens if a person is selling Kalayim? Kalayim are also Belavisha, but not Bahanos. You're allowed to sell Kalayim, make a profit from it. But you don't want to be taxed. So you have a large, you know, repertoire of garments. So you want to wear them, layer upon layer upon layer. Again, it's going to be very hot in the summer, but at least the tax collector will not be able to collect taxes from you because you fooled him, so to speak, into believing that those are your personal attire. It's not merchandise that you're selling on the market. And the Gemara is going to record now Machlokas Tanoim about whether or not this is legitimate. Lo Yilbash Adam, the first opinion, which is that of the Tanakama, prohibits wearing kelayim afilu al gavi asara begadim. He's wearing 10 layers of garments, one on top of the other. And why is he doing so? Lavriach bo es hameches. He's not going to be taxed for these garments. I remember I was once traveling with my wife from Romania to Hungary in one of these short planes. So they told me I was overweight. So I had a lot of kosher food because I knew I wasn't going to get kosher food over there. So I started opening up my suitcase and taking all the tuna fish cans and putting them into every pocket that I found under my hat. And I said to the guy, "Now weigh me." That's how I got away with it.
They do it in all too.
Yeah. So he says that as far as Lavriach Boas HaMeches is concerned, nobody seems to raise a voice of objection, and you're allowed to do this. The only problem is that you're wearing Kelayim. So the problem here is the Mishnah in Kelayim that prohibits it because of the Iser Kelayim. Now wait a second. In the Iser Kelayim, you want to get Hanah, you want to get benefit from Levishas Kelayim. Here he's not motivated to get benefit with 10 layers of Gadim, he's motivated to avoid taxation. Is Masnisan, this Mishnah is the low Rabbi Akiva, is against Rabbi Akiva. Why? Because Rabbi Akiva says that since you're not doing this for the sake of Hanos Levisha, then there's no Iser Kelayim over here. Desanya, also Lavriach Es HaMeches. The Tanakhama says you're not allowed to wear these begodim in order to avoid taxes. Rab Shimon Omer, Mishum Rabbi Akiva, Mutter Lavriach Es HaMeches. You're allowed to do this. So the Gemara says the following. Bishleim Alinyan Kelayim, as far as this Mishnah's location in Masechta Kelayim is concerned, I understand very well the machlokas between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Akiva. The Tanakhama is in the Mishnah, and Rabbi Akiva is in the Braisa. Why behakam ifli? Mar Sovar, Dovashenim Miskavin Mutter, Umar Sovar, Dovashenim Miskavin also. We have a universal machlokas about someone who doesn't have kavana to violate Navera. Here, he has no kavana for the Levisha Bitoras Hanoas Kelayim, but rather his kavana is motivated in order to avoid taxation. And therefore, Rabbi Akiva allows it because it's a Dovashenim Miskavin, and Rabbi Akiva is committed to the opinion, which is also Rabbi Shimon's opinion, that Dovashenim Miskavin is Mutter in Kala Torah Kula. By the way, this is very relevant. There was a question that came up in the Tshuvas literature about a certain medication that was taken in order to heal him of a certain ailment, but as a result he became sterile. That was the nature of the thing. So the question is, that's an Iser of Sirus. You're not allowed to make yourself sterile, but it was a Dovah Shein Miskavin. So the poskim want to know, does it come under Dovah Shein Miskavin? Is it Psikresha? Does Psikresha apply in the Dovah Shein Miskavin in Shara Torah, or is it only in Shabbos? Anyway, so this is Rabbi Akiva's famous position at Dovah Shein Miskavin Mut. Good. So therefore, if he wants to wear these begodim only for the purpose of avoiding taxation, he's not interested in avos levisha. Therefore, it is Dovah Shein Miskavin. It's Mutter. Umar Sover of the Tanakhama, whose shita is reflected in this mishnah, Dovah Shein Miskavin. Awesome. Okay, fine. That I can understand. There's an inner machlokas here within the laws of Kelayim that reflect an application of a universal debate that covers the whole gamut of Isurim, whether Dov Shein Miskavin is also Dov Shein Miskavin. But nobody blinks about the fact, Elo Lavriach Boas HaMeches Mishari. Is anybody going to allow tax evasion? V'Amar Shmuel, Dina Malchus Adina, didn't Shmuel say that we have a commitment to abide by the law of the land? And the Mishnah seems to assume that if not for the Iser Levishas Kelayim, as far as taxation is concerned, this would be Mutter. The only issue here, and the Chachamim opposed it, is because he's wearing Kelayim, and it's a Dovah Shein Miskavin, which is also. But what about Dina Malchus Adina? And here again, we have the two answers that we had before, but not to explain our Mishnah, why the Mokseh, the tax collectors in our Mishnah, are holding on to Gzela, and it's not considered Dina Malchusa, but rather, why am I allowed to avoid taxes by wearing these begadim? And the answer is, Rav Chanina's answer is, B'moche Shein Lo Kitzva, and Rav Yanai is the answer of B'moche Sa'omed Me'elof. So you have the two answers, let's just review them very quickly. Number one is that there's no compassion in this law, because we're going to squeeze you for whatever we can. It's ain't lo kitzva, there's no limit. It's like Rashi says in Masechta Kiddushin that the despots, and the Jews suffer from this tremendously, they used to draft Jews to the service of the king, and Rashi says in the name of Yishami, it was a dovash ain't lo kitzva, meaning there was no limit. It wasn't like you got called up for a year or two or three, a month, a half a year. No, it was ain't lo kitzva. Once you were called, that was it. You could never resume your life in the family, in the community. And here also, in the case of a mochesh ain't lo kitzva, he's allowed to charge you whatever the heck he wants to charge you. He can rip you off. Or, according to Rav Yanai, we're talking about a mochesh that is self-elected, self-appointed, and he's not an official arm of the king. Now here at Bosai, I have to point out to you that there's a fascinating Rambam. Let me explain to you why I'm so fascinated by this Rambam. The Mishnah says in Kelayim, not the Mishnah that we're studying now, the previous Mishnah says that if you're a seller of garments, and the issue now is not tax evasion, but rather transportation, meaning you want to get your garments from place to place, from neighborhood to neighborhood, and you want to transport them, and let's say for argument's sake, your wagon is full up to the top, so you still have garments to wear. Amongst these garments are some that are shatnez or kelayim. Are you allowed to wear them? And as a result, by wearing them, you can transport them from place to place. I used to read a children's book, but I forgot the name of it. You remember the book with all the caps? What was it called?
Catnap.
No, I don't. Not the catnap. No. This was a classic in children's books where, you know, he has one cap on top of the other cap on top of the other. I think it was before Dr. Seuss. It's like back 100 years ago. Anyway, I'll get the name for you if you're interested. So this guy is the garment on the garment. You know, not the hat on the hat or the cat in the hat, but he wears one garment on top of the other. So the Mishnah says the following. Bimos hachama mutar. Bimos hakshamim asur. That during the winter months, you're not allowed to do such a thing because the assumption is he's going to have hanas levisha. It's going to warm him up, even though he's putting layer on top of layer. But b'shas ha-chama, during the summer months, it's, what did I just say? In the summer months, it's, I meant to say in the winter months it's asur, but in the summer months it's mut. That's what I meant to say. So in the summer months it's mut because he's not having hanas levisha. So all the mafarshim say that the Mishnah that allows the seller to transport his kalayim by wearing them during the summer months, that Mishnah is antithetical to this Mishnah that we're learning now, the Tanakhama of whom says that you're not allowed to wear kalayim even for tax evasion. And the reason is because this Mishnah presents the Shita that Dovah Shena Miskaven is asur, and therefore you're not allowed to wear it for tax evasion. And yet, the other Mishnah says you're allowed to wear it for the sake of transportation, for the sake of facilitating your ability to sell it. So all the Mefarshim Pe'echad say unanimously that we have to assume that the Mishnah that allows during the summer months that you wear all these begadim of Kalayim, that's according to whom? Rabbi Akiva. Whereas our Mishnah in Kalayim that doesn't allow you to wear it for tax evasion purposes, that's the Rabban and the Chacham of Rabbi Akiva. Everything seems to fit into a beautiful place until we get to the Rambam. The Rambam, in fact, paskins like both Mishnayos. The Rambam paskins in Hilchas Kalayim Perek Yud Halachah Tes Zayin that Muto Limkar Lov She Shatnez B'Yemos Hachama. He says that you're allowed to wear many begadim during the summer months in order to transport them from place to place. That's in Halacha Tes Zayin. In Halacha Yud Ches, he writes, but Lavriach Es Hameches Asur V'Loke Im Lovesh. Now, why do I emphasize this? We're not dealing with some sort of Easter called Dina Malchus Adina, because if you violate Dina Malchus Adina, the Beis Din's not going to give you Malchus for that. But we're talking about Malchus, we're talking about violating an Easter Kelayim. So the Rambam on the one hand allows a seller to wear begadim one on top of the other during these summer months, because presumably he's not miskaven for the hanos levisha, it's already hot, he's sweating under the collar. And yet the Rambam prohibits you from wearing layers and layers of begadim in order to avoid taxes, when once again, as the Gemara presented to us right here, he doesn't have kavanah for hanos levisha. He's not interested in hanos levisha. The reason he's wearing these extra begadim is not because he wants to warm his body, but rather because he wants to avoid the taxation. So how could the Rambam say that in the second case of avoiding taxation, you get malchus for that, i.e. you violated the Issur Kelayim, and yet in the first case, when he was wearing it in order to transport it from place to place during the Yemos HaChama, the Rambam says mutter, he's allowed to do it. And I looked here in the Kesef Mishnah, and the Kesef Mishnah says, Das HaRambam L'chalik Bein HaLa L'vein Levisha. and he wants to say that the Mokrei Ksus didn't really wear these begadim, they only threw it on top of their bodies, which is called halah. Whereas in order to avoid taxation, you need levisha mamish. I'll tell you the truth. I'm not here to argue with the Kesef Mishnah, that would be ridiculous, but in the language of the Rambam, there's no indication at all that they're different tzuros halavisha over here. I don't know. I suspect the following. Again, this is the Eravon Mugbal, as we say, that maybe what the Rambam means to say is that there are two different categories of a Dover She'eino Miskaven. There's a Dover She'eino Miskaven where he doesn't want to have any benefit whatsoever from these kelayim. He's really fighting it. He's really anti. There's an anti-force against Hanos Levisha. In other words, the Levisha is being forced upon him simply because he doesn't have enough hands to carry his begadim. So in the absence of the ability, the energy to carry his begadim, he puts it on his body. The Levisha is simply a result of less brera. That's one kind of Dover She'eino Miskaven. There's another type of Levisha, says the Rambam, a different category, where it's true he's not interested in the physical pleasure from the Levisha, but he's definitely interested in benefiting from the Levisha itself. What do I mean? The tax collector wants to know, are you selling these begadim, or are they for personal use? Are these the tuna fish cans that you want to sell in Hungary, or are these the tuna fish cans that you want to eat in Hungary? And the answer is that if I'm wearing them in order to fool the tax collector, then what I mean is that my kavana is l'shem levisha. And if my kavana is l'shem levisha, I can't claim, oh, I'm protected by the law due to the principle of Dover She'eino Miskaven. I want the levisha. That's the only way I can fool the tax collector and avoid taxation. But in the case of transportation, there I'm not in the least bit interested in Levisha. Levisha is not my secret. Levisha is just another way. If I can hold up the begadim in my toes and carry them, if I have very strong toes, if I was very acrobatic and I could do it in another way, then that would be fine for me. I don't need Levisha. But here in the case of taxation, I need Levisha. Even though I would rather do without Levisha, but under the circumstances that have been imposed upon me, I need Levisha. That, according to the Rambam, makes it into a Dover HaMiskaven. In any event, as we said before, just give me another minute, Herb, the whole sugya here that we're learning is geared towards one goal. And that is these two statements of Rabbi Hanina and Debei Rav Yanai, respectively, to limit and circumscribe Shmuel's principle of Dina Malchusa Dina, in what context were these statements made? So let's just review what we've said. Two possibilities. Possibility number one, it was made in the context of justifying why the Mochsen and Amishnah considered Gazlonim. After all, aren't they duly representing the king? And therefore those statutes come under Dina de Malchusa Dina. Or, alternatively, why do we allow, if not for the Iser Kelayim, avoiding the taxes on these big day Kelayim by wearing them when we should be paying our taxes, we should not be avoiding taxes, Dina de Malchusa Dina. And at this point, the Gemara is going to try a third possibility, another Mishnah in Shas, where cheating the government comes and seems to be legitimized, and maybe we have to understand what Rav Hanina and the Bei Rav Yane would say in order to justify cheating the government. Go ahead.
Getting back to Kesef Mishnah, yeah, where he distinguishes.
He wants to say that these Mokrei Ksus are not wearing the begadim, they're only throwing it on their bodies.
There's two psukim in regard to Shadness. One is Lusuba Shadness, and one is Vei Tlaim Nosala Alecha.
Right. So he says
so
that
there's obviously a difference in the Shonas, which is more than just a difference in Lashon.
Right.
There's got to be some change.
Correct. And he says that the real full-fledged Iser of Kelayim is Levisha. There's a secondary Iser called Halah. And the Rambam is going to allow, in the case of Halah, a Dover She'eino Miskaven. But in the case of Levisha, there's no heter of a Dover She'eino Miskaven.
Okay.
That's fine. I'm not trying to argue about it. Just what I was pointing out is that the Rambam should have given us some clue, some indication in his language that he's talking about two different two different realities. Okay. Ika demasni aha. Now we have another possibility. A Mishnah Masechta Nedarim. Now the Mishnah Masechta Nedarim is going to describe the case of a Mishnah in which a person takes a neder, and it's a very harsh neder. It has tremendous repercussions on his life if the neder is to be taken literally and is validated, but he only took the neder in order to avoid taxation. Now again, the sociology here of this Mishnah is a little bit strange to our ears. Like a person is putting a gun to your head and he wants to steal your money, so you tell him that, and first you take an edit to this effect, that all this money belongs to the king, or all this money belongs to the Kohanim because it's Truma. And I was wondering why the murderer could give two hoots as to whether it's Truma or not. Apparently even though, you know, these aren't the murderers of our day, you know. The murderers back in the day were Frum, I guess. The second case is going to be the Mochsin, you know, these are the tax collectors. Boy, you tell the tax collector that this is Truma, and all of a sudden, you know, he gets the heebie-jeebies. You know, this belongs to the priests, you know, I think in terms of a little bit, I don't know much of history, but back in the day, even the Christians had a certain respect for the rabbis. My father got his smicha before he finished college, which is very rare in those days. So he had a professor in English literature who came from Colombia. And my father was 21 years old. And the professor used to stand up for my father whenever he came into class. He was a gut. But my father had smicha, so he was an ordained rabbi. You have to stand up for a rabbi. Try that out today on the streets of New York. You might have to, don't hold your breath. So in any event, the guy takes, now how does he convince the tax collector that this is Truma? So, you know the phrase of Shver by my Bubba's Bear, you know that, you know, he has to swear in order to show that this is true. So he takes a certain kind of a neder. We'll see it's a very harsh neder. And he accepts upon himself through this neder that all his fruits are Truma. Wow. Which means that he's got to bring it to the Kohen, because even though the minimum amount you have to give to a Kohen is a chita achas poter sakri, and if you're an Adam Beinoni, you'll give 1 out of 50, and if you're a real tzaddik, you'll give 1 out of 40, but you don't give all your nechassim to Truma.
So how does it help him? He's lost it both.
So in order to impress this, let's read through Nodrin, how does the neder impress the Hargin, you know, these rotschim, these murderers, or Haramim, these are thieves, they don't kill for the money, but they'll steal your money, or most in the tax class, how does he impress them, Shehi Shel Truma, that these fruits actually belong to the Kohanim, and they're Truma, and then the Hargim and the Charamim and the Mosim will back off because they don't want to mess around with Truma. How does he do so? He takes upon himself a neder in which he says that all my fruits are Truma. That's called a neder. We'll see that there are different types of nedarim. One type of neder is what's called nidre isur. Another type of neder is called nidre hegdesh. And when you take upon yourself that all your nechasim should belong to the Kohanim, that's nidre hegdesh. Oh, here's another possibility in a way that he could stave off the tax collectors. Shehi shel Beis HaMelech. That in fact, all this belongs to the Beis HaMelech. And he takes a neder that if this, listen to this, if this is not really Truma, if this does not really belong to the king, then my neder has it that I'm usur in all produce in the world forever and ever. Le'olam vo'et. That's all peros. That means the five species of grains and basically anything that grows from the ground. I will not partake of that for the rest of my life. Ichshver. You know, it's like I want to show you how this is true. And that's how he scares them off. The afalpi she'ena shel truma, the afalpi she'ena shel melech. The whole thing is gebluffed, and this is all a ploy in order to push away these people from stealing his money or for killing him for his money. And the Mishnah says in Nedarim that since at the time that he took this neder, he only did it for this purpose. So he added in his mind, again, we're going to have a lot to talk about here, can you add something to a neder qualification or a t'nai in your mind that seems to violate what principle? Dvarim shavleh lo havi dvarim. That this neder would only be chal for a moment or for a day. That's what he had in mind. And the Mishnah is going to permit this on two levels. Number one, it means that even though he said nothing about limiting the neder, nevertheless, that limitation to one day will be validated because that's what he had in his mind. And number two, that he's allowed to do this in order to fool the mochzen. And we're going to let him get away with this whole tax evasion by taking this false neder. How can we do this and allow this kind of neder? It's called nidrei onsim in the language of the Mishnah and the Dorim. How can we permit this in order to avoid taxes? And of course, we can anticipate the same two answers that we've had over and over again. Omar Rav Chanina, it's Ein Lo Kitzva, Debe Rav Yanai, it's Omeid Me'elav, Mokhisa Omeid Me'elav. So here in the context of this third Mishnah, we're going to allow him to take this neder, even though the neder is chal, is not chal, I mean it's only chal based on what he has in his heart. And why are we going to make a special allowance for this? In order to facilitate his ability to cheat the authorities from taxes. And the answer is, this is not upsetting the rule of Shmuel of Dina Malchusa because of the following two reasons, and there's no Dina Malchusa Dina in these cases. So let's just summarize. How many answers do we have so far? How many different explanations to Rav Chanina and Debei Rav Yanai? We have the first one, which is on our Mishnah of Tevas HaMoksim, that everything is assumed to be stolen. We have it in the Mishnah in Kilayim with regard to wearing these begadim of Kilayim to cheat the taxes. And then we have the Mishnah in Nedarim, which is going to make a separate allowance and invalidate the neder because of the need to cheat the taxes because of these two explanations. That leads us up to Roman numeral number 4 in this sugya, and that is Rav Ashi. Now, what we have to point out, and I don't know if this was obvious to any of you, it was certainly not obvious to me, that the entire sugya, 1, 2, and 3, until this point, has assumed that the Moches is a Yisrael. He's a Jew. When I learned that, I was a little bit in shock. All sorts of visions of not such kosher Jews, you know, flew through my mind. And this Jew, again, if he was duly appointed by the king to collect taxes in a legitimate way, nicha, okay, that's the way he makes his living. Again, I would try to avoid that. You know, whenever I see these pakachim, you know, they're looking around to give you a ticket, you know, because you're illegally parked. You know, and sometimes, you know, they see there's 1 minute left to the meter and they wait there until that minute passes. So I always say to myself, thank God I'm not a pakach, although maybe the city municipality could use some extra funds. But nevertheless, there's nothing terrible about being a moches if you're representing a legitimate government. But if on the other hand you're a self-appointed moches and you're trying to cheat people and squeeze them for whatever monies you can get, obviously that's not the kind of Jew that you want to give him a makom b'mizrach, you know, and so forth and so on. Comes along Rav Ashi and he says, no, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about b'moches knani. Now he has a historical footnote over here. He says that it really doesn't say knani, it says moches goy. But the censorship did not allow the word goy. So they wrote knani. You know, like he's a knani, you know. Who cares about the Canaanites, you know? But really what it means is he's a goy. Nope. This is fascinating. If he had been a Jew, then he's legit. He's not stealing. He's duly representing the government, and it's a compassionate government, and everything is fine. I can't cheat him. Who am I cheating? I'm cheating a moches who's a guy, and even if he's legitimate, and even if he's representing the government, But he's taking some of those monies at least and pocketing them. He's putting it into his bank account. And therefore I could cheat him because he's a guy. And what does this mean? And again, you don't have to turn the page. I do. Desanya, and we have a brisa that says that if you've never learned this, this is going to be a little bit shocking to you, maybe even upsetting to you, that Yisrael v'knani anos shebo l'din. Now, the word anos was also added by the censor, so take out the word anos and just read it the following. Yisrael u'knani shebo l'din, which really should mean Yisrael v'goy shebo l'din, and they come in front of a Jewish bezdin. So the brisa offers the dayanim three possibilities, and the common denominator in all three is that who's going to win the case? The Jew. The first possibility is if according to Jewish law the Jew has the merit of the case, then fine, tip the scale in his favor. Then Marlo, tell the guy, look, you came to a Jewish base, then I'm going to govern you and adjudicate by the laws of the Jewish law. Oh. But what happens if according to Jewish law he cannot vindicate the Jew? Is then the other option is bedine knanim, if in the non-Jewish laws if the Jew cannot be exonerated according to Jewish law, then then tell him that according to the non-Jewish law of the land, the statutes of the land, the civil law, the Jew is exonerated. And Marlo Kachdinchem, look, I'm going according to your law. V'imlav, but what if the Jew cannot be exonerated neither according to Jewish law nor according to non-Jewish law? Is boyin alav ba'kifin, somehow trick him and fool him in order to make sure that the Jew gets the collection of the money. Divrei Rabbi Yishmael. Now, I thought that Rabbi Akiva was going to get up and he was going to scream, Chai v'kayim, you're stealing from a guy. Lo sashok, it says, don't cheat a guy. No, look what Rabbi Akiva says. Rabbi Akiva Omer, in ein boy in the love ba'akif, and I'm not going to allow you to do this. Why? Mipnei kiddush Hashem. Rashi says that they'll figure it out. At some point down the line, they'll know that they were cheated, and that's going to create a tremendous chil Hashem. But by the way, what does that mean? We'll soon see cases where they will never find out about it, and therefore there's no possibility of what? Of chil Hashem. Then it would be mutter. And it's even Rabbi Akiva accepts the fundamental principle of Rabbi Yishmael that you're allowed to cheat a guy. Says the Gemara, Rabbi Akiva, time of the Ikur Kiddush Hashem. The reason why Rabbi Akiva objects to doing this and presenting a verdict that's against the law is because of Chil Hashem. Haleka Kiddush Hashem. If there's no issue of Kiddush Hashem and Chil Hashem is Boyin, then we could come by Kifin and somehow cheat him. Fektigamova, the Gezel Knanim Ishori. Are you allowed to steal from a guy? Now, at this point, I was hoping, again, I guess I have an agenda here because of my upbringing, but I was hoping the Gemara would come up with a pasuk lo sigzol. The Torah does say that you're not allowed to steal, does it matter? Last time I looked. So the Rishonim want to know, why is it that the Gemara assumes that you're allowed to steal from a guy? So again, there's going to be a long discussion. I'm just going to give you, next week if it's Hashem, what's today? Today's Tuesday. So on Thursday, we'll try to pick this up again, because I have 10 minutes to finish the sugya. But the breakdown is the following, just to keep you in mind, that there are two isurim in stealing. One is called losashok, and one is called losigzol. Now, in the case of losigzol, that's all it says in the pasuk is losigzol, thou shalt not steal. But in the case of losashok, there's another word, l'reach. So they want to taina And again, the question is whether Gzela is defined as a separate entity of Oshek, or there are two ways, this is a Sugi Bamitziah, two ways of saying the same thing. But in any event, in the case of Oshek, for example, where I swindle you, let's say, for example, I owe you as you're my employee, and I deny you wages, that's Oshek. In such a case, it says L'Reacha. L'Reacha means B'Torah U'B'Mitzvos, as opposed to a guy. So in other words, if the Gemara is going to establish that there's an Iser Gezel Knani, Gezel Agoy, the Gemara is going to have to look very hard to come up with an Iser. And the Gemara is going to offer two explanations as to where that Iser is rooted. One is at the end of Sefer Vayikra, which is also on the bottom of your page, Kuf Yud Gimel. And that is a pasuk that says, Akre Nimkar Geula Tihi Elo. So we really have to open up a chumash and go through the psukim here. But the subject of that pasuk, of that entire parasha in Vayikra Chaf Hei, at the very end of Vayikra Chaf Hei, is a Yisrael that's being sold as an eved to a guy. And the pasuk indicates, and Chazal talk about this that at great length, that the punishment of a Jew having to be sold as an eved to a guy is for being mezalzel in Perosh Shvius. For example, the Torah says that you're not allowed to sell Peros Shvius on the open market. We have an institution called Otzar Bezdin, but that's a whole different story. And if a person violates this Iser continuously, then the Torah describes the various levels of punishment one by one. It gets more and more severe until the highest level, the most severe punishment, harsh, is they sell him as an Eved to a guy. Now the Torah says, but Achrei Nimkar, after this Jew was sold to a guy, Geula Tihi Elo. Geula means he can buy himself freedom. Let's say, for example, he sold himself at the price of 1,000. If he comes up with that 1,000, then he pays the guy 1,000, and then he goes free. So the Gemara says, Shaloyim Shechenu V'yetzeh. But it doesn't mean that he's allowed to just run away from the Adon, from the non-Jewish master, but rather Geula Tielo, he's got to pay Kesef. Geula means Kesef. He's got to buy himself back and redeem himself. Yochol Yiglom Olav. What happens if the guy wants to double overcharge him, right? He wants to charge him double. It's Talmud Lomer v'chishev im koneh. The end of the pasuk says that we have to calculate with the buyer, meaning the non-Jewish master, v'chishev, how much is the eved worth? Yedagdek im koneh. And therefore, he will pay the guy that which on the market is his value, but not a cent more. But in any event, we see clearly from this entire presentation that Rabbi Akiva holds that you're not allowed to cheat a guy. Again, I emphasize, the prohibition against cheating a guy financially is not gzela in the classical sense of los sigzol. It's derived from a separate parasha, the parasha of a Yisrael that was sold as an eved to a guy, but whatever it is, the bottom line is it's asur. And therefore we come back to our original question, why does Rabbi Akiva say that cheating a guy is only a question of Kiddush Hashem and Chilul Hashem? Cheating a guy and stealing from a guy is prohibited according to Rabbi Akiva under the parasha of Achrei Nimkar Geula Tiel. Amar Rav Yosef Lo Kasha Ha B'Knayni V'Ha B'Ger Toshav. Now, both sides, this is a major, major sugya. There are two types of goyim, and the Torah relates to them in two different ways, especially with regard to monetary law. One kind of a guy is simply a guy who has no relationship to Torah mitzvahs, and the other is a ger toshav who has some relationship, even though he's not a ger tzedek, he hasn't accepted upon himself 613, but he is committed to X. And what that X is a gigantic controversy amongst the Rishonim. We'll go with the Shitas HaRambam, the simple sheet. Again, it gets a lot more complicated. That he is committed to the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach. But the Rambam says it's not enough that he's committed to the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach. He's got accepted upon himself in front of a Bezdin Shel Yisrael. And then he has the status of a Ger Toshav. Once he has the status of a Ger Toshav, we're allowed to leave him in Eretz Yisrael. we're allowed to treat him financially the way we treat a Jew, and to some extent we even finance him, we give him monies if he's in need for financial help. And certainly, says Rabbi Akiva, we don't want to cheat such a person, because as far as Dini Momenus is concerned, he's included in the Isa Gezel. Again, when I say Isa Gezel, I mean the Isa Gezel that's derived from this pasuk of Geula Tiela. But in the case of a regular stand-up guy who's not committed to the seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach, and certainly hasn't accepted it formally in front of a Beis Din, he is subject to the law of Gzela, of Heter Gzela. We're allowed to steal from him. So when the Torah says Geula Tielo, it's referring to a Yisrael that was sold to a Ger Toshav. The Ger Toshav now purchases the Yisrael as an Eved. In event that the Yisrael gathers together the funds to redeem himself, he pays off the Ger Toshav. Had it been a Knani that he was sold to, he can run away from the Knani, and he doesn't have to worry about the fact that the Knani paid him, and now he's cheating him by not offering him the employment, the work, the service. He just ran away. Okay. We didn't finish the sugya yet, but I do want to go backwards a little bit to Rav Ashi. So turn back, if you will, to Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. And Rav Ashi says, B'moches God. And here we have a chiddush of the Rashba. The Rashba wants to say that when Rav Ashi says that the Mishnah is talking about a moches who is a guy, he's referring to the Mishnah in Kilayim. And in the case of Kilayim, in which he's cheating the tax collectors by wearing these big day Kilayim on his body, he's allowed to do so because the moches who's collecting these taxes is a guy. However, says Rav Ashi, says the Rashba, this statement of Rav Ashi has no relationship whatsoever to our Mishnah. We're going to soon see about the Mishnah in the Darim, because in the case of our Mishnah, the monies that are collected by the moches are not stolen monies. They are monies that are collected kedas upkedin based on the principle of Dina de Malchusa Dina. There are statutes and laws that require and justify taxation and the collection of those taxes. So what do you gain by telling me that the moches is a guy? It's irrelevant. Whether the moches is a Jew or a guy, the monies are not stolen monies, because monies that are collected in taxation are legit under the law of Dina Malchusa Dina, unless you're talking about a case where you're self-appointed, etc., etc., the whole nine yards. But to tell me that the moches is a guy, that doesn't help me one iota. We're not talking about stealing from the moches. What we're talking about in our mission is whether or not we assume the monies in the kis shel mochsin are stolen monies or not. Whether or not the moches happens to be a yid mit bud and peis, or he's a guy with a cross on limbs, is irrelevant. If he is an appointed member of the kingship and he is fulfilling the laws and statutes of a legitimate malchus, then dina malchus adina. So this answer of Rav Ashi is not going to shed any light whatsoever on our Mishnah. Oh, but what about the Mishnah of Nidarim? Would it shed a light on the Mishnah in Nidarim? So he says the following. Okay, I don't know if we're going to have time for this, but we'll see. He says that the Ravid applies our Gemara of Rav Ashi even to the Mishnah in Nidarim, and he, the Rashba, disagrees. The Afshar Ravid Pirushagam Osa, even that Mishnah in Nidarim, Bar Rav Ashi Litar, Shemin Dubar Begoy, Lachain Mutu Lahavrich Mimenu, Lavriach Mimenu Sameches, Harashba Cholik Visover, Sha'af shemuto legozlo mikomakom lindar lo vaday she'osu mikol shahete lindar hu mishum ones. We came to the mikra din hu chayav es hameches ein lo din ones af shemuto lo legozlo eino ones al kach. He says the following: the government is collecting taxes. If the tax collector is a guy, you're allowed to steal from him. But that doesn't solve the problem. Why? Because since there's a legitimate collection of taxes, you are not, in a sense, onus. This is not nidre onsen. Nidre onsen means you have no choice but to suffer a loss unless you take this neder. We're not going to justify this neder and apply that kula, that the restriction of the neder should apply, that it's only for one day, etc., etc., for this case, because it's not an onus. Why isn't it an onus? Because he has the responsibility to pay his taxes. Again, since the meches collector is a guy, therefore there's no iser of gezel akum, but that doesn't mean we're going to allow him to take this oath, this neder, which is really a false neder. Okay, there are both sides. We'll stop here.
Knani Anas Shabbat Adin, as in Knani Anas, Dafka Knani Anas, and not Egoy.
Ah, Amiri here?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm impressed that you saw the Amiri. I'm lucky if I get through the Gemara.
I saw it in the notes.
Oh, okay.
Sure.
That's good.